This is VOA's International Edition. Today is Tuesday, the 7th of February. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the latest on the fight over the president's executive order temporarily banning travel from some countries.
People, in terms of particularly the Muslim ban aspect of this, that believes that the president's executive power has been exceeded.
The president facing backlash over his latest comments regarding Russia.
I say it's better to get along with Russia than not.
Also ahead, the Super Bowl winners rejoice. G. Abby Lee on what's trending on social media and some fresh movie reviews. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, legal experts almost all agree that the constitutionality of President Trump's executive order temporarily halting travel to the U.S. by refugees and others from seven Muslim-majority countries will end up being decided in the Supreme Court. Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein was asked by Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday for her view on the executive order.
The president is not a dictator, Chris. He is the chief executive of our country, and there is a tension between the branches of government. Specifically, the framers of our Constitution wanted a strong Congress for the very reason that most of these kinds of things should be done within the scope of lawmaking. This is done within the scope of executive power. And the challenge to executive power, I think, can be made, is appropriate to be made when you think it's exceeded. And there are people, in terms of particularly the Muslim ban aspect of this, that believe that the president's executive power has been exceeded.
Also on the same show, Vice President Mike Pence defended the order.
From the very outset of his campaign for president and the outset of this administration, President Trump has made it clear he's going to put the safety and security of the American people first. And the executive order that he signed, suspending travel from countries that have been compromised by terror, is consistent with that objective. And also, Chris, it's consistent with his powers as president of the United States of America, both under the Constitution and under statutory law. It's quite clear that the president has the ability to determine who has access to this country when it comes to national security.
And the president, who made his first official visit to members of the military, made his case on Monday at U.S. Central Command.
We need strong programs so that people that love us and want to love our country and will end up loving our country are allowed in, not people that want to destroy us and destroy our country.
Numerous cases involving the travel ban are now working their way up through the courts, and one already seems destined for the nation's highest court. Nearly 100 tech companies, including Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and Twitter, also filed a legal brief late Sunday supporting the lawsuit against the travel ban. Well, joining me now to talk about this and also recent tensions with Iran, John J. Maloof, founding partner of NYC-based Maloof, Ashford & Talbot Law Firm, one of the world's leading international trade lawyers. Well, before we get to the recent events with Iran's missile launch and the new president's response to that, what's your view on this travel ban, particularly when it comes to Iran? Should Iran be included on the list of countries that the president says creates a danger?
If you look at the countries that are listed in the travel ban, I do not believe that individuals from any of those countries have been convicted or even alleged to have committed acts of terrorism against the United States.
Do you have any views on this whole thing?
Well, overall, I'd say that if the travel ban is unfair to Iran, it's unfair to the other countries on that list as well.
Is it unfair?
Yes, I think so. In reality, it is a ban against people of a particular religion, which violates the U.S. Constitution. No country on that list has citizens that have been responsible for terrorist acts against Americans. There's no good reason to have bans in place for people from those countries.
As an attorney, I know this isn't your area of expertise, but obviously as an attorney, you know the Constitution well. So what do you believe is going to be the ultimate outcome here? Do you think it will end up in the Supreme Court?
Absolutely. The Supreme Court must get involved. There's no question about it. I think that the administration has overstepped its bounds, and there is a constitutional violation here, and that the United States Supreme Court will find that this ban is a violation of the U.S. Constitution and will strike it down.
Was the initial Iranian missile test likely to send Donald Trump as new president a message, or was it just pure coincidence and really had nothing to do with the U.S. in your view?
No, I think Iran has been developing this technology for a very long time. They would likely have preferred to launch the missile during the more permissive Obama administration, however, they were unable to test it before now.
Do you think that these sanctions were justified? Were they a bit hasty? And how will they impact Iran or us, for that matter?
No, I don't think they were hasty. Iran has historically backed down from a belligerent position when faced with strong and immediate response from the West. When allowed to violate international treaties with impunity, Iran has generally responded with even more aggressive behavior. So I think this was a good move by the administration.
Do you think this is potentially the beginning of the making of a case to get out of the Iran nuclear deal?
Absolutely. The nuclear deal with Iran was ill-conceived from the start and poorly executed. Both the Trump administration and the Republican Congress have made it clear that the U.S. will be exiting this deal, and Iran's clear violation of the nuclear treaty has only served to validate that decision.
Do you think no deal is better than what we have?
Absolutely.
Why is that?
Iran was on the brink of bankruptcy. Their economy was crippled. They were on their knees. What we needed to do was continue pushing. Instead, we gave them a lifeline of billions of dollars. So we took a bad situation and we made it good for them instead of capitalizing on our position.
General Michael Flynn made some comments after the missile launch that rattled some nerves and had others wondering what exactly it meant when he said we're putting Iran on notice. What is your take on those comments?
There's a new sheriff in town. Iran is now dealing with the new administration in the White House, one that is far less willing to turn a blind eye to blatant treaty violations. Iran has received fair warning. And if they continue this reckless course of action, there will be serious repercussions, which they will regret.
But what does that mean?
That the United States will end the treaty and will impose even more severe sanctions against Iran, sanctions that will lead to a crippling of their economy and force them to their knees.
Well, I think some people were wondering if it meant something even more severe, like potentially starting war with Iran.
No. The Iranians have historically backed down when confronted with a clear show of strength. Setting well-defined limits and detailing the severe consequences Iran will face if they engage in this type of belligerent conduct has historically helped to curb Iran's more aggressive policies and ultimately result in avoiding further conflict.
So you think folks that are concerned that this all risks a potential war with Iran is unfounded?
Totally. Completely unfounded.
Was there anything about the Iran nuclear deal that you thought might be worthwhile?
Absolutely nothing. Even as far as U.S. businesses are concerned, U.S. companies are still restricted from conducting business with Iran, so there's absolutely no upside for the United States economy. The Iranians get to sell their oil in the international market. They received billions of dollars. They received unrestricted ability to engage in transactions with the rest of the West, including most of Europe. Now, this was fantastic for the Iranians and terrible for the United States.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. New York-based John J. Maloof, founding partner of New York City-based Maloof, Ashford and Talbot. Here are some of the stories that we are following at voanews.com. A Florida man sentenced to 30 years for mosque arson. Israeli parliament legalizes 4,000 Jewish settlements on private Palestinian land. A British speaker opposes the Trump address to parliament. And the European Central Bank head is warning on Trump deregulation push. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. And on our VOA mobile app, this is International Edition. Well, the Kremlin is indignant over the comments of a Fox News host who called Russian President Vladimir Putin a killer in an interview with President Donald Trump. In the interview broadcast over the weekend on Fox News, host Bill Riley asked how the president will relate to Putin.
Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
He's a killer, though.
Putin's a killer. A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent?
Well, Putin's spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, refused to comment Monday on Trump's reply, but did lash out at Fox News, calling O'Reilly's comments unacceptable and offensive. But here at home, there's also been a response to Trump's answer.
You cannot compare any leaders in our country to what Vladimir Putin has done. This is a man and a regime that has taken down a passenger plane in Ukraine, killing hundreds of people. This is a regime that has been known to poison human rights activists. This is a regime that we believe 17 intelligence agencies in our own country has said has tried to influence our own election.
That's Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar. Well, Trump has praised Putin and signaled that U.S.-Russia relations could be in for a makeover under his leadership. Putin, in turn, has spoken warmly of Trump. Well, Donald Trump has made many comments also about China over the past year as a candidate and now as president. From trade to the One China policy to the South China Sea, some tense words have been exchanged between Beijing and Washington. VOA Mandarin reporter Li Ya explains to VOA's Jim Stevenson why 2017 may not be the best year for President Trump to try pushing hard against China.
I think right now they really don't know what to make of President Trump. As you just mentioned, what made them really nervous is his questioning of the One China policy, which, you know, is really the cornerstone, the foundation of the U.S.-China relations. So I think Beijing right now is pretty anxious about what kind of China policy the Trump administration might adopt. And I'm sure they're watching very carefully what's going to come up next.
You had spoken with some experts about the Trump-China relationship, and they had indicated that 2017 might not be the best year for Donald Trump to provoke China. What are some of the things that the experts were talking about specific to this year?
Domestically for China, the 19th Party Congress is going to be held this fall. This thing happens every 5 years, and it's a major thing for the Chinese President Xi Jinping. So this is especially important. Right now we have 7 Politburo members. 5 of them are expected to retire from that. So you can see that's a major turnover. And so a lot of power struggle is involved in that. And not only the standing member of the Politburo, there's also the Central Committee members. And a lot of them are also going to be retired, or they have to leave those posts. Richard McGregor, he used to be the bureau chief for the Financial Times. He also served as the bureau chief for the Financial Times here in Washington, D.C. He basically said that, you know, at this very sensitive time for China, it's not really a good time. The experts are pointing out that when you have a major party congress going on, the government is extremely sensitive to any external pressures.
China has a selection year, not an election year, but I do believe things are much more sensitive. You can get a very good idea from looking at what happened in 2012 between Japan and China when they had their last fight over the Senkaku Daiyu Islands. And really the bilateral relationship has never recovered since. I mean, there's another dynamic happening there. But this is the absolute worst time to dump some sensitive issue into the internal politics in Beijing.
Like Richard McGregor put it, you know, he cited the China-Japan relations in last party congress in 2012. We had the Diaoyu Island dispute. China-Japan relations, even today, hasn't really recovered from that. So the same thing it could be true between China and the United States if President Trump takes some steps, whether it's on the One China policy or in the South China Sea. The Chinese government has no choice but to react very strongly. So they think this is a particularly dangerous time for the U.S. administration to do anything that's harmful to the U.S.-China relations.
That's VOA Mandarin reporter Li Ya. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news
at the top of each hour, around the clock, on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, mentally stimulating activities can keep your brain sharp well into old age. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on findings by Mayo Clinic researchers at the Mayo Clinic in Arizona that point to ways to reduce the chance of developing mild dementia.
Exercising, putting together puzzles, socializing. These are some of the things researchers are looking at as ways to keep older adults from developing dementia. Some studies focus on exercise. Exercise improves blood flow in the brain and keeps it functioning both physically and mentally. Other studies focus on mental activity. Researchers at the Mayo Clinic looked at brain-stimulating activities to see if it could help older adults lower the risk of developing even mild cognitive impairment. Mild cognitive impairment, or MCI, doesn't interfere with everyday life, but those who have it are at greater risk for developing Alzheimer's.
This study is very important because dementia, MCI, these conditions are really common as we get older. We need to find out non-pharmacological approaches to decrease the risk of MCI or dementia.
Gaeta of the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, co-authored a study that included 2,000 healthy adults, 70 and older, to see if playing games, crafting, using a computer, and staying socially active could reduce the risk of mild cognitive impairment. The researchers found that these activities, even late in life, helped stave off dementia, even in those who were genetically at risk. Only 15% of the participants developed mild cognitive impairment over an average of 4 years. The mental activity doesn't have to be a chore, Gaeta said. Just exercising your brain 2 to 3 times a week could reduce cognitive decline. The study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Well, Tom Brady, quarterback of the American-style professional football team, New England Patriots, spoke Monday, hours after his team won its 5th Super Bowl championship. And he won his 5th Super Bowl ring and 4th Most Valuable Player trophy. Brady called the unprecedented 34-28 overtime victory over the Atlanta Falcons a, quote, hell of a game for his mother, who's been dealing with an undisclosed health issue and was not able to attend any other games this season.
To beat this team and to get down 28-3, and, you know, it was just a lot of mental toughness by our team, and, you know, we're all going to remember this for the rest of our life.
Well, what was missing from the celebration was Brady's game jersey, which he said disappeared from the locker room. Texas's lieutenant governor asked the Texas Rangers to help Houston police look for the jersey. Brady joked that he expects to spot it soon in an online auction. Turning now to what's been trending on social media, we are joined by G. Abby Lee. Hey, G.
Hi, Lori.
So I saw the New York Times and Time both tweeted about misophonia. Let's start with that.
Yeah, so if the sound of crunching, slurping, or foot tapping drives you to a fit of rage, you're suffering from that. The New York Times shared a link to its article about the condition and asked Twitter users what sound annoys them the most. A lot of people wrote nail clipping is the worst, and so are the furniture dragging on the floor and lip smacking. Thankfully, I don't have the condition, but I know a couple of people who do. Do you?
Unfortunately, yes.
Oh, sorry.
Especially when you're talking on the phone. That's always fun. So what's trending on the politics front?
President Trump has been quite prolific on Twitter the last couple of days, as you know, and he targeted the New York Times in particular after a report claimed he was not fully briefed on an executive order. Now, that order gave his chief strategist, Steve Bannon, a seat at the National Security Council. Mr. Trump tweeted, "I call my own shots, largely based on an accumulation of data, and everyone knows it. Some fake news media, in order to marginalize me, lies." The most popular reply to that tweet was a challenge to his travel ban. A user named Jose wrote, "Data shows not a single terrorist from the seven countries in your executive order has attacked on the U.S. soil ever." Other people also argued the easiest way to correct the perception that Bannon is in charge is to get him out of the NSC. Trump supporters stepped up to argue that there are 3,000 people who flew across state borders to cast illegal votes during the presidential election.
Okay, well, we have time for one more topic. What you got?
It looks like Aussie pop icon Kylie Minogue will continue to be the only Kylie. American reality star Kylie Jenner attempted to trademark the name about 3 years ago, and Kylie Minogue, who has been using the name since the 80s, launched a legal dispute against the trademark and won. Kylie Jenner, as you might know, is the daughter of Caitlyn Jenner and also appear in that reality show called Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Right, right.
Twitter users are having a ball talking about the upset win. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her on Twitter at G Abby Lee and myself at Lori London. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Turning now to what's happening in U.S. theaters, we are joined by Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Thanks for being here as always, Jeff. So you saw The Space Between Us. It's not getting great reviews. What's that about?
It's about the first baby born on Mars. And it stars Asa Butterfield as the first baby born on Mars, but now he's a teenager, and he technically is a Martian, right? So he wants to return home. He's been Skyping with a teenage girl back on Earth named Tulsa, and he wants to go back to Earth and seek out, you know, what it means to be human. He's been raised by scientists. He lives in a bubble, so he really doesn't understand human interaction, you know, on that level. He doesn't understand what a blue sky looks like or an ocean.
Study lab is over. Gotta go.
Talk tomorrow?
I'm not going anywhere. My name is Gardner Elliott. I was born on Mars, but I finally found a reason to go to Earth.
It's a coming-of-age movie. It's a teen romance. And then, most of all, it's a road trip movie. So Gary Oldman is the head of the space program, and he's like, look, if you return to Earth, you're going to have heart problems. You're going to have all these medical conditions because you basically lived on Mars your whole life. And this takes place not too distant future, so it's not like 100 years from now. But when he turns home, he escapes from NASA, seeks out this girl, and he wants to find out who he is and seek out his family and just, you know, it's about self-identity. Asa Butterfield really sells it. You really believe the innocence of this kid. You really believe he hasn't seen any of these things. And it's just a fun, romantic teen movie. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Plus, I love the sci-fi angle to it also. You know, there's the Martian colonization and exploring and all that. So it's got a lot of great positive messages.
It could be one of those movies that's sort of like a sleeper at the movies, but then it just takes off when it goes on to video.
You're lucky if your movie's a big success in the theaters. But you know what? Very few people in the scheme of things go to the movies anymore. They're all about on demand. They're all about at home. They're all about watching it on their tablet or on their computer. So it will find an audience because I think Asa Butterfield, he did Ender's Game and he was a little boy in Hugo. But I think it will find an audience when it gets on home video because it is a great family film.
Okay. Well, speaking of family films, I know we've got a good one for the kids, the Batman Lego movie.
Absolutely. If you saw the first Lego movie, it was a worldwide hit. I remember going to see it and thinking, this is for little kids, Legos, but it is the most sophisticated, funny comedy, one of the greatest animated films of all time, and one of the breakout characters was Batman, voiced by Will Arnett. And every poll and every, you know, kind of feedback the studio got, they wanted Batman in his own movie.
Thank you. I'm blushing super hard under the mask.
Not only is the Lego Batman in this film, It's the Batman universe. So there's Gotham City. There's all the rogues gallery of villains, including the Joker. And there's the Justice League. And Batman has got a real egotistical attitude. He's a lone vigilante. But, of course, Robin shows up, and he has to learn to work as a team to defeat the Joker. So the movie is hysterical. Every kind of inside joke you can think of, it's for adults, it's for children. I mean, I don't remember when I laughed so hard. It was so fun.
Well, that's cool. It was fun, even for adults, eh?
Even more so for adults. I think the adults will enjoy it more than the kids will. But I'm telling you, this is the movie to bring the family to see, because you're going to have a great time with all the jokes going by, hitting the kids and hitting the adults at two different times.
Okay, sounds good to me. Thanks so much, Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is working closely with Nigeria to improve efficiencies in the vital oil sector. The U.S. Commercial Service Nigeria sponsored a single company promotion event in Lagos on January 26th that focused on strengthening the skills of process operators working in Nigeria's refinery and chemical industry, said United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, Mission Director Michelle Godet. The event launched a new training simulation solution by New Jersey-based Simulation Solutions Incorporated. Simulation Solutions is a leading provider of PC-based dynamic simulation training programs for process operators in the refinery and chemical industries, as well as for government and academia. The company's INSTO five-step process technology operator training for professionals has been used by downstream oil firms all over the world to improve plant efficiency. U.S. Consul General John Bray said in his opening remarks that for Nigeria to overcome its current economic challenges, it must find ways to diversify its economy while improving firm-level productivity. He encouraged participants to actively engage with simulation solutions to improve their organization's bottom-line profitability. Over 60 representatives from across Nigeria's petrochemical sector, including officers from Nigeria's National Oil Company, regulatory agencies, as well as professionals drawn from private refineries, training institutes, and academia, learned how companies can effectively operate their plants without accidents and downtime, saving costs and improving profitability. U.S. Commercial Service Counselor Brent Omdahl anchored the event. Audience participants expressed keen interest in establishing a partnership with Simulation Solutions and in adapting the simulator training program to their individual operations. Academic speakers encouraged a gradual introduction of the training program into technical and executive skills curricula. In the coming months, the U.S. Commercial Service in Nigeria will continue to support Simulation Solutions and its Nigeria partners as they roll out training programs at interested organizations across the country. The United States is proud to work with its partner Nigeria to promote trade that benefits the U.S., Nigeria, and the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.